Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. What's up, y'all? Last week on Questlove Supreme, Greg Phillinganes took us on a journey through his career from auditioning for Stevie Wonder's band fresh out of high school to working with the Jacksons during the Destiny and Triumph years. And when we left Greg, he was telling us how he got Jack for his writer's credit for 10% of the publishing royalties for Michael Jackson's Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And he also said there was a Quincy Jones version of that story, too. So here's part two of the special Greg Phillinganes edition of Questlove Supreme. Here we go.
So, you know,
it's what's the song?
Well, Amir.
100 ways. 100 ways.
No.
Oh, damn.
Oh, no, 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 no. There's something a lot more subtle.
Oprah.
Huh?
Oprah theme?
I was going to
guess. No, 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 no. You're never going to get it. You're not going to get it. I'm going to set it up for you because you're never going to get it.
This
the setup
movie.
Is this.
Now, this is great.
Yeah,
yes.
It's good, isn't it?
Yes.
You're having fun with
yes.
me.
Yeah. So much.
You want to do another one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So here's the thing. The thing is this. So it's me and it's Neil Steubenhaus and, I want to say Paul Jackson Jr. on guitar. I'm not sure, but I think so. And I'm pretty sure it's JR on drums. We're in the studio and we're just vibing, you know, we're just right about here. We're vibing, you know, and it's a nice little thing going on. And we're just vibing, you know, and Quincy's like, hey, all right, you know, we're just vibing and this vibe is being recorded. You know, right about here. And okay, some time passes, and I don't mean hours, I don't mean days, I mean some time. And now Quincy's working on
Q's juke joint. I think I figured it out.
I believe so. Wait, before you all say anything, I believe mm-hmm. so. And he says, yeah, you know, we're doing this thing, and I wanna recreate that groove thing. You know, I wanna recreate that thing that's right about this tempo right here. And so, if you think you know it, what is the song?
Secret Garden.
Slow Jams.
Oh, damn! Oh. I had the wrong one.
What'd you say?
Secret Garden.
Bingo!
Wow.
Wow.
Thank you.
Oh,
I'm gonna be a special secret.
Okay, and that's. Okay. Yeah.
Damn.
Oh, there's a story for everything. So it's like, I love Quincy's dirty draws, but he would never admit that. Because you know what? I asked him about it one day. He's like, what are you talking about? Long time ago, I asked him. And he reared up at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, okay, I get it.
Damn.
You got a good heart.
So after that joint came out.
No, I'm just pretty stupid.
Oh, well, I was just.
No, I mean, it's the game. No, here's the
thing. The thing is this. I was too busy being hurt. I was too busy being emotionally affected as opposed to saying, oh, hell with this. I'm fighting this. But really, are you really prepared to fight
Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson for a piece of a song with Michael and his
team of lawyers.
Team?
Army. Oh, yeah.
Are you really think you're gonna like succeed in that? I have a freaking prayer. So what am I gonna do? Right. You know? And so I had to suck it up. But what I lost and look, 10%, please. I'd be living next to Quincy. Yeah. With 10% of that one
of that
song.
One song, yeah.
But you know what I lost in revenue? I'd like to think I gained in a relationship.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah,
because it went from that. And by the way, it ain't just that.
I know.
What else you got?
Oh, how about did the end of Heartbreak Hotel play itself?
You wrote that bridge.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. Which was orchestrated, doubled with strings and everything.
Yes.
Because Michael said, we need something dramatic here at the end. So I came up with that.
Wow.
And then they added an orchestra to that too.
Did you start after this? Do you start looking around when you're just jamming and making sure the button ain't pushed?
No, darling, because I'm too busy being inspired.
Okay.
So because it happened so quick for me, literally when Michael said, we need something dramatic here at the end. Before you could finish the Jeopardy theme song,
I get it.
Okay. Oh, but it doesn't end there.
What else you got?
So now it's Dangerous. Is it Dangerous? It's Dangerous. I think it's the Dangerous album.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Dangerous album. It's a Dangerous album, and we're working on this one song, and Michael says, beautiful song, by the way, beautiful. And he says, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to talk kind of like a monologue thing, and I just want something, I want some music underneath.
Cause in the closet? Talk. In the closet?
Heal the world.
Ah.
No. And I just need, so I need some music because it's going to be dramatic, and I'm going to talk through this thing at the end of it, you know, and so I just need some music. So I said, okay, no problem. Any takers?
Wait, yeah,
I was thinking your mama.
No. is it the
Thank you so much. Wait, you can't even announce that joke?
Well, nah, I missed it.
We did this day on Soul 3 PR Roger.
Your mama. Shit. Is it what was the is it's not Heal the World?
Is it that
Oh, will you be there?
What?
Will you be there?
Bingo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, at the end.
Yeah. Thank
at
you.
The at the end. End. Okay, the I'm thinking the
which was double with orchestra and choir. Thank you. That is about another 3 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Somewhere two, three.
Missed
two,
out on
two.
That Free Willy money? Yeah.
So, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, can you explain to the listener who may not know the intricacies of what your jobs were at these sessions? So can you just explain the difference, like when arranging becomes writing,
songwriting,
when associate producing becomes composing?
Well, Steve, I'd love to explain that, except there's such a fine line and such a slippery slope. It's kind of hard to define because this is the equivalent of beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Well, arranging is in the eye of the who art. Deems you an arranger. Yeah. As opposed to a songwriter, as opposed to just an arranger, as opposed to just a little keyboard player that we're going to give a check one time to and send him on his way because I want all the credit.
Right. So ultimately, those things come down to whether you are going to stand up for
it. It comes down to either whether you're going to stand up and fight it or if it's mutually agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, mutually agreed in writing.
Have you ever seen someone been like, hey, by the way, and then they didn't get a call back? Like, have you ever seen someone get blackballed or not used again? Or don't even mess with that guy. He's
a troublemaker.
Nothing specific. But like, is there
a way to be ixnayed and blackballed from? Because you're in a sweet spot.
Yeah,
you keep getting work, and you keep getting work, and you keep like you're on. I mean, between. Between 77 and 97, you're on everything.
I know, but I mean, whenever I would try to raise a little dust, I always got pushback. I mean, there was the time when, what was it? It was Triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And I was classified as an associate producer. Well, things went on and on and on and on and on, and things were fine until one day I show up to the studio and Bill Bray standing outside the door.
What?
And he says, don't need you today, Bubba.
What?
I'm like, what are you talking about? I got to go in. Just don't need you today, Bubba. They just decided that I was done.
Wow.
Because anymore they would have to pay you.
Did you say something the day before?
No. I did nothing. The day before, I went into work. Everything was fine. The next day, I go and I'm barred.
Yeah, sometimes people bar you because they feel bad about what you've done.
No, they just decided they could take it over from there. and they did not need my assistance. Yeah, they didn't need my assistance anymore, so they just said, okay, you're done, bye.
Can I ask, all right, so my question about Triumph, engineering-wise...
But I do have a positive punchline story to the end of what I just said.
Okay.
But, you want to ask?
Yeah. Well, just the engineering of the Triumph album sounds very flat to me, as opposed to how wide open Destiny was. And I know I really need you to tell me a really good engineering story of Bruce Wardeen. What Bruce Wardeen brought to Off the Wall. It's
It's like, it's like 3D almost.
Who did the same, do you remember who mixed the Triumph?
I don't, but the same people were not involved. And I kind of understand what you're saying sonically, but I just can't tell you why. I'm not, because I don't remember who was involved.
So you weren't there for the overseeing of the mixing and none of that stuff?
Oh, no.
No. Side question.
Yeah.
Those sessions sounded really fun. Because
they absolutely were.
It's almost to the point where I could tell almost what order it was recorded. Because some of them songs, you did the majority of the count off. You'd be like, okay, one, two, three, four. And then some of them songs, you guys sound like you were on your 50th beer. I mean, not that, but just sound like, so what were the sessions like? I mean,
the best way I could describe it is fun. There was so much.
And how do you learn this stuff? Like, how does it come from, here's the cassette demo and da 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 da? Like, do you get the cassette first and do you work out these full-fledged arrangements and how long?
We would hear the demo in some form, and then after I came up with the arrangement, I would just, we had charts. I have a chart. It's actually, my wife insisted that I frame the chart to Blame It on the Boogie, and so it's over. Mm. It's over the piano in the house. So we had charts. And I would just dole out the parts, but it was heck of fun. It was just so much fun. I remember, and I think it was during the Destiny album, I remember, being in the studio part and, we were just, you know, there wasn't anything going on officially, just kind of different things happening at the same time, just stuff going on. But I remember, hearing somebody playing drums, and it was really funky. It was just like this thing, and I remember peering around, and it was Michael.
He could play drums?
He could play drums.
Oh, wow.
What?
Most people do not know this, but if you think about it, it made perfect sense, because like Sammy. He's a dancer. Yeah.
Yeah, he beatboxed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so he could definitely play, and he was fun. And it was, I only saw it one time, but I was like, wow. As a matter of fact, Amir, there's a picture of an even younger Michael playing drums, and I have it. I'll say, do you have it?
I've seen that for
you. Yeah, okay. But no, I saw him for myself, and it was like, wow, I didn't see this coming.
Oh my God, we didn't even get to like Thriller and Off the Wall.
Listen, I'm waiting for the Streets of Fire, and I'm
just... Oh Lord. But let me give you the positive punchline to all this negativity, because lie is, as I was saying, what I lost in revenue, I gained in relationship, to the point where, you know, there was this one fateful evening where we were all together in this room backstage in this arena, and we were all together outside of Michael. I went to his room separately, but I'm standing there with the brothers in a circle, and I remember saying to them, you know what? Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think, after, you know, listening to your records, junior high school, and watching your shows, I never ever imagined in my life that I'd be standing in a room with all of you as your music director, getting ready to tell you to have a great show. And it was backstage in Madison Square Garden, and we were about to do the 30th anniversary of shows.
Wow.
And to go from that point early in my life as a fan and having just fantasies about them and what it must be like to hang with them, to actually be arm in arm with them in a huddle before we start the 30th anniversary shows, and I get to tell them, have a great one. I can't begin to tell you what that's like.
Yeah. that sense of balance in your system is amazing, because at the same time, it's like, here you are in that moment, but these are still the same guys that may did a couple of shady things to you. So you have to continue to be the bigger person and really just appreciate the moment and the bigger things that are yet to come.
Well, thank you. All I can say is that, you know, the thing that won over everything else was love. And we all realized that we really do love each other.
Wait, I'm not done the technical nerd questions.
Oh, by all means.
We over here evoking emotions.
Yeah, emotions.
And you over here like, what microphone?
Yeah, let me ruin this for a second. So, wanna be starting something.
Yeah.
Are you playing the synth bass, the line?
Yep.
Now, was sequencing out then, or did you have to do that 7 minutes in a row?
No, I did it.
There was tape looping?
I don't need no stinking sequencer.
Come on, man. But look, dude, y'all were playing with a Lindrum. So you're telling me for 7 minutes.
Yeah, I'm telling you that.
7 minutes in a row. Because
I was just young and crazy like that.
How many punch-ins did you have to do?
Not many.
Whew. Dog.
No, dude, because I graduated Wonder U.
Oh, well,
yeah. Okay, fair enough.
There you go. It's like Jimmy Jam when he says, when he would play all the stuff on the 12-inch version.
Yeah.
Right.
All,
straight through. And they went to the School of Prince, so.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, okay.
It makes sense.
No, I just. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just thinking of all, like, even, you didn't veer off into one ad lib on Shake Your Body Down to the Ground to like the last minute.
No, that's not true. That's not true. You got I.
Well, okay, there was some.
I had little things, but I paced it. To your point, yes, I definitely paced it.
Okay, you're right. You did.
You know, and another thing is another example of that is Don't Stop. I paced those licks too. I mean, I kept basically. Oh, an even better example is Thriller.
That's what I want to get to.
Yeah.
Oh, you already answered. You're not sequencing, so you're playing the stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
How are you finding these patches? Because now that the remixes are coming out.
Yeah.
Thrill is almost borderline a precursor to EDM, at least with the patches that you're using. Like, how long do you, that's what I'm saying, like, in.
Well, we had lots of help as far as programming. We had guys like that
Michael
were
Boddicker.
We had Michael Boddicker. He was like on call. That was our go-to guy. And there were others, but
was he more of a tech guy or an actual
player?
Well, because he was playing on the Jackson Store.
He played,
but he programmed better.
But he, yeah, the strength, I would say, was the programming.
That was his bread and butter.
So, yeah. But was it a time is money atmosphere? So, okay, so we're in the studio right
no.
now.
It was whatever it takes to get the right sound.
Okay, but what's the patience factor? Because it's like, even the little, like right before Vincent Price's rap thing,
mm-hmm.
How long do you have to like, let me try this. Let me try this. Even with Keyboards Today, like it takes me 20 minutes to decide, and this stuff is already preset.
Mm-hmm.
What's the time? Like, what time do you have to think of something cool? Do you have mere minutes?
No, there was no time. There was no.
When it was right, then you knew.
Yeah, there was no consideration of time. It's just like, Lily, I need this patch. Go. I need this sound, rather. Go. And it's however long it took was however long it took.
Are you playing on Beat It?
Yeah.
What is that intro gong? What is that noise? What is that?
Could not tell you if you held me a gunpoint.
I saw a YouTube video. It's an old synthesizer, and they were going through the presets on it, and that was one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
not Synclavier?
I can't remember. It's been a while since I saw that video. But
okay. No, I have no idea, bro.
What was that? Human Nature, is that Paige and all those cats?
Yeah, that's Steve Picaro.
Okay.
But they didn't need me for that. It's my man, Steve Picaro. You know the story about that song, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Quincy, he told us about it.
Quincy and Rod. listening to cassettes ad nauseum, and then they're like falling asleep and stuff, and it's the
auto end reverse.
Auto reverse, and then you know, and they're like in a semi sleep state, and all of a sudden, like, what is that? Rest is history.
Wow. It was a synclavier, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of remember that now. Yeah,
it's a clavier too.
Okay, 100 Ways is one of our favorite solos.
Really?
You don't.
Oh my God, you guys.
You're not going to understand it.
Wow.
But in hip hop terms.
Really?
That's all I can say. Yes, it's really? Been chopped lovely to the point where like almost every line of that thing is
the solo.
Yeah.
It means the world to us. It was done in an ironic, I think it was done in a very ironic way, but it just
stuck. You might as well play it. I mean, it's, you know, it's.
Yeah. I mean, the song's been out for forever.
So. Yeah.
Wait, what's the title of it?
Rhymes Like Dimes.
Yeah, this is Jesus Christ.
Really? Hey, yo, y'all can't stand right here.
Uh-oh.
In his right hand was your man's worst nightmare. Loud enough to burst his right eardrum close range. The game is not only dangerous, but it's most strange. I sell rhymes like dimes. The one who mostly keep gasping, brag about the broken times. Joking rhymes like the issue, just having to see me trick. Classical slapstick rappers need chapstick. A lot of them sound like they're in a talent show, so I'll give them something to remember like the Alamo. Tally ho, a high joker like Space Game. Came back from 5 years late.
I mean,
what do you say?
This is
my jaw is dropped. This I've never heard this before.
The song is near 20 years old. But
what?
See, that's the thing.
I've never heard. This is my first time hearing this. I've never.
100 Ways means something totally different
to us.
Like, initially, it was like, yeah, that's mom and dad's song, or like, easy. No, but he turned.
Well, not with that.
Yeah, but he turned it. And even when I heard it, I was like, yo. Yeah. I never ever thought
that this could
be chopped.
Yeah.
That's a crazy person who did that. That's, that's a person with a whole lot of time on there.
Yes, MF Doom is very
who
very
actually
crazy.
Did that? Who actually produced that?
MF Doom.
MF Doom, you're a crazy guy. You're crazy, bro.
He is. So,
well, did Quincy tell you the story of that solo?
He told you like he woke you up out of your sleep.
Yeah.
You
That was during the time of Assembly Line. Sessions, and you when you went to work for Quincy, you knew two things. You knew three things. A, it was gonna be fun. B, you were gonna eat well, and C, you never knew how long you were gonna be. So I mean, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, man, and I had done some other stuff, and at this point, I'm asleep under a piano. Somebody came in and woke me up and said, "All right, you're up again." I go, "Okay." In my stupor, you know, I stumble up to the thing and it's a mini Moog, and they go, and Quincy says, "Right, so this is 100 Ways and we need a solo. Go."
Wow.
That's how it was.
Does he play you the full song at least before
well,
you
well, at least yeah, play I mean, the changes?
They played the song and I'm like, "Okay." So what you hear in that solo, like 90% of it was the first take, and I only did and then I only did like a couple of takes to finish it, but up until that point, that's the first take. Wow. And Quincy to this day says it's his favorite solo of mine because it was done in the what he calls the alpha state. What's known as the alpha state, because you know only he can like be scientific with it. I was asleep, but you know he said, "No, dude, it's the alpha state," because you weren't thinking,
dude. Do y'all know about this? There's a scientist that did a research on her students in which she would do pop quizzes on her 7 a.m. class. Versus prepared test advance notice to her smarter class at 12 in the afternoon. Mm. And the pop
7 a.m. class will win.
They did better because it's almost like
we overthink.
There's a middle ground of not preparing and over preparing and overthinking.
Yeah.
And the genius zone is always in the middle where it's just like,
yeah. No, that's... I think Quincy lives for that.
So does Questlove Supreme.
His goal is to be in that state constantly.
Wow.
And so that's where I was. And again, it only took like three takes or so for me to finish, But that... That's just the first thing that came out.
I have a question about the Bad album.
Yeah.
And I guess I shared this theory in the documentary. It's what I call the brace yourself moment, which you're a big part of. Like, all these songs have to start with this stab from hell, this chord. Well, not even that. I mean, that's probably an easy patch, but like, you know, like Dirty Diana's. And that, like, by this point, are they telling you, okay, Greg, every song on this album, we need.
Well, no, because that really wasn't me.
That wasn't?
No. Those examples you cited, like with first of all, I'm not on Dirty Diana.
Oh,
I'm not on that at all.
Another part of me,
and actually, I'm not on that either.
Speed Demon,
you on Way You Make Me Feel?
I'm on The Way You Make Me Feel. Okay. I'm not on Speed Demon, unfortunately. That's Jerry Hay. That's crazy, Jerry Hay, with those horns. And that's what made the song. You know that.
Yes.
Jerry had to get tightened up for that. Because, you know, Michael was a little, slow on that. And it was like, and Quincy was like, oh, no. There would be no Speed Demon without that horn arrangement. So you're going to tighten up, Jerry. You know, but I am on The Way You Make Me Feel. And my favorite memory of that is, you know, because I played the string parts. Right? Yeah. So what I remember is doing that and having Michael standing next to me going, yes. Vibing with me, because I'm like, dun, dun, and he's like,
neck moving, dun,
dude.
So that was fun.
How big is his snaps?
Yeah.
Dude, he had he had these big ass hands, and his snaps sound like claves, don't they?
Yes,
because you think it's claves on the bridge of
Rock With You.
Yeah, but it's not.
No.
And when the groove, that's his fingers.
I thought that was claves.
Nope, it's his fingers.
Wait, can I ask for Rock With You?
Yeah.
Who? Well, I guess I should have asked Quincy instead. That horn intro?
Oh. Da, 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 da. The one that got removed?
Why did they take that away?
It doesn't make sense to me.
What horn intro?
It's just,
there's a horn intro to Rock With You that got mixed
see,
out.
Here's the thing that I love about Off the Wall.
Well, I certainly don't remember that.
I'll play it for you off the record.
Yeah.
The thing that I discovered about with Thriller and Off the Wall is that a lot of this stuff is, I can tell that at least what I assume the relationship between Michael and Quincy is, let's try every idea out, and then you're going to trust me to pull this away and this away and edit this and edit that. So there are a lot of elements on those albums that, had they been there, oh, God, it would have been like the worst dated disco album of all time. Or, you know,
isn't that crazy?
One slight misstep. So yeah. I applaud Quincy for knowing what to pull away.
What the cut. Yeah.
But there's,
and that's
just
his brilliance.
There's just moments of, okay, so I'm thinking that you were there on the ground floor of the horn intro instead of just the naked.
No, because what I remember about that was Quincy saying to JR, I want to have a drum lick that's going to live in infamy. I want to have a drum like that kids are going to remember, you know, 100 years from now. And so he came over with it. That was that.
Oh. Bad question. Please tell me that by this time you went on the tour and you and Ricky were back together.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
No, how did Ricky get that gig and not Jonathan Moffitt? Because you were the MD?
Because
I thought like Jonathan would have been the Jacksons drummer for life.
Yeah, you'd think that.
So how did Ricky get it? Well, Ricky also had the Victory Tour, right?
No. No, that was Jonathan on Victory.
Okay.
Ricky did Bad and Dangerous.
I saw but that show.
You did?
Yeah, with Sheryl Crow.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm. What were you, three?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I was.
You just made this woman's life.
Yes, I was.
You couldn't have been more than five.
I was like 10.
Tell, please. Okay, so still. I still have socks older than you, please. And so I don't remember, to be honest, because even though, you know, he made me the MD and that whole process was weird. There were other people hiring people. So I didn't really hire everybody. So I didn't hire the whole band. I mean, there are certain people that were chosen before I was even asked.
How did you present that show without out of the age of Pro Tools? You know, because the Bad Tour.
Oh, well, that's easy. We just had, like, was it two? At least two full-blown synclavias.
Oof. Yeah. Damn.
And back then, that was a lot of money.
And y'all are touring with
him. Nah, it was like, whatever, by any means necessary. I mean, the money was no object, and so we had, like, two full-blown.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was his first real tour.
To handle the background vocals and the extra tracks. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Damn. Wow. Man, what was it like when Sheryl Crow came into the picture for that tour? Like, what did she bring to the table?
Whiteness.
Sorry.
Because she wasn't the one with the lights in her hair. No.
No, that was Jennifer Madden. She was the guitarist. You know, you ask a very loaded question, my young friend.
Okay. Hmm.
That was Saida's gig first,
because,
right?
No, she was after.
Okay.
That was Saida did Dangerous. Sheryl did Bad. I would say that the thing that Sheryl brought the most was...
Yeah! Oh. Yeah! Oh, Steve is the walking
silence,
out.
The silence. The silence here. Is this a hot topic that we should...
Something I said, Steve?
He's like the white person about to get single again.
No, what she brought was a secret love affair.
Okay.
Oh.
Here in my garden? Oh.
Well, who?
Well, between two people, and I was the other one.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Yes, Greg.
Cam, like, yeah, you can sniff.
No, that was Fonte's question.
Yeah,
that was Fonte.
Oh, my fault.
You know, Fonte had a cup of shade. You know. Yeah. What you got to say, Fonte?
That's a perfect question.
Nah, man. Hey, listen. I guess asking questions. He's talking. You know,
I guess you didn't see that coming, eh?
Nope.
Well, wow, Steve, you missed out.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, man.
He's probably in the control room right now.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Man.
Good for you.
No, it wasn't good because I was married, Liar.
He said
love affair.
Yeah.
That's the thing. How can you be?
Yes, I was bad.
Okay. So explain.
Not just the tour, darling. I was bad.
Explain that.
It wasn't just the name of a tour.
Yeah.
Can one be a working musician and have domestic normalcy? I mean, if you're doing the Michael Jackson Bad Tour, are what about the kids at home for it? Not just you, just like the bass player or the lighting coordinator. Like, you guys were going from 87 to the top of January 89.
No, understand, we ruled the world. Understand that.
Yes.
But... Were girls flinging themselves over all of us? Not over all of us. And I was in that group. I wasn't getting girls flung at me, you know, because a lot of people just assume, oh, my God, you must have had it dripping out of your ears. Mm-hmm. And that did not happen to me.
I didn't mean it from that perspective, but I just meant, like,
can you be
if you have a
married
relationship at home, like if your college professor wife is at home.
No, it's very, very difficult, and you better bring him out at some point.
Or, like, would Michael allow, like, would he charter jet for families to come visit?
No, he didn't do that. But he did welcome families. He was into that. And, you know, several of us, including me, brought our families out at different points. I mean, and, you know, Michael, you know, one of the singers, Dorian Holly, brought his little Nayana, and she spent a lot of time on the road with us. And, you know, Ricky brought his kids and his wife. I brought mine out. It was great in that way.
Didn't help.
Not in my case. I mean, I remember when we were in Tokyo, and he arranged for us to all go to Disneyland.
Just y'all?
We shut down the park, baby, yes. And it was us. Wow. And you haven't lived until you've been to Disneyland with the head Mickey. And matter of fact, I used to call him Mickey, and he would answer to that too. But it was great. And so, yes, he loved, the family's hanging and all that. But to answer the question, yeah, you needed to have, you couldn't sustain a tour like that and never see your spouse or your family. Mm-hmm. At any point, you had to have them join you.
It's easier now with FaceTime and all that stuff. But absolutely. Back then, it was like.
No, it was rough.
No, but it's like going, it's a wrap. You're going to do a bid.
Yeah, you're going, you're in the military. Yeah. You know, it's like you're gone.
I would have been Valerie Simpson.
Wait a minute. Whoa. We did not even ask about Behind the Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Oh, Behind the Mask. Yeah, so I was working on my second solo album while working on
The Pulse.
Yeah. While we were also doing
oh my God, wait a minute.
Thriller.
We're just all over the place.
We are, because we have, you know.
Remind me to remind you just that Lionel did Right by You.
Oh, for Can't Slow Down?
Never mind.
He did, basically, yeah. He did. Well, he did better to me than Michael did, that's for sure.
Right. Or, did you do All Night Long and...
No.
Here,
no.
Let me give you Love Will Find a Way.
Yeah, no. He actually did All Night Long by himself. But I did... Love Will Find a Way and Love Will Conquer All.
Yes, you did.
Okay. The two best songs.
And I thank you very much.
And a crazy video.
Yeah.
And I did get, credit and checks for that.
That's who sang on Love Will Conquer All?
Crap. I can't remember her name right now. I see her face and I can't remember her name. Shoot.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah,
I always thought that was his take on the Al Green song. Like, that was Love Will Conquer All.
Interesting.
No.
That's what it sounds like. It might
sound like that. Well, yeah, I didn't really because I well well I tell you what. I wasn't well, not really, because I wasn't thinking of that.
Okay.
That wasn't my
I don't hear that.
So,
that song is so
I
good.
I love it.
That's interesting that you, because I wasn't thinking of that at all.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Marva King. Interesting.
Marva,
that was Marva
right.
King?
Marva, thank you. Yes, it was
Princess Marva King?
Well later
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Because I keep getting her and Marva Hicks confused.
Okay.
She's the one with James Brown, right? Was Marva,
no, that was Marva Whitney.
That was Marva Whitney.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Marvas.
Yeah, Marva.
Oh, nice of you to join us, Steve. Thanks.
You missed it, Steve. The fair. It was, you missed it. It was the good news. It wasn't bad
well,
news.
Well, you'll hear the replay. It's all
right. Yeah. It's good.
So Lionel did do Right to Her by me.
Okay. You worked songs. On his first solo album, right?
Yeah. And
that was where I first saw your name. Yeah. When I was like four. Yeah.
That's crazy. And then
you left during the Lionel Richie portion.
And
when his favorite
that's
what, people.
That's all he lives for, Lionel Richie.
Right, the first Lionel Richie. You're on that.
You don't have the right to come here and ask questions. You have to sit.
No,
the
intro to You Are.
No, he is so serious.
No, what you sound like right now, Steve. No, first of all, I'm not on that. But what you sounded like, Steve, was like that. Are you out of there? Okay, if you don't come back, if you leave. But you sound like that. Some kind of movie was like the guy goes. No, I was like an SNL.
Yeah, that's
thing
amazing.
Where you,
yeah.
You know the thing that you did.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was a mirror when we first started the show.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, serves you right. That was well, Mr. Phil and
what about my love?
Oh yeah, and I wrote that with
serves you right.
Very mysterious John McClane. Yes.
Oh wow.
The executive John McClane. Yep.
Wow, I didn't. Yep.
So oh my God, there's some more John McClane credits that I've seen, and I didn't think that was him. He was a songwriter first.
Well, we.
Oh wait a minute! You didn't get credit for serves you right.
Oh, I got a story about me and John.
Hit me.
Well, John, who I love dearly. Let me just start out
preface
by saying
with
that.
Right.
Let me just say that right now. I do love him dearly. I really do. He's the kind of guy that you'll never get to love because he just doesn't allow it. Mm-hmm. But I love him. And we spent a lot of time together in 79 and the early 80s. We spent a lot of time together. And I had this dream, we had this dream of forming a band that would be called PM. Oh. And never,
what?
Yeah, and never happened.
He's from Detroit?
No, it's from here. But we hooked up somehow, and he was the first guy that sounded like Prince before Prince. That's how he played guitar.
That yeah. John McClane?
Yep.
Man.
Yep. That John McClane.
We gotta find this motherfucker.
Well, if you do, you will win the ultimate prize.
We gunning for him. It's just we can't find him.
And you know what? Sorry to say, but you probably won't.
Really?
Yeah, he's that mysterious. You know what? You can Google anybody on the planet.
Yeah, I was about to say, him. I can't even, if he walked in right now, I wouldn't know. I've never seen
you
what he looks like.
You can't Google
him. I imagine that he looks like Stoney Jackson.
I found an old picture of him. But yeah.
No.
Is it brother? Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's a black guy.
Damn.
But no, you can't find him.
Wow.
Damn, so he Medina-ized his way into the industry as an executive. The same way that Benny Medina was a musician.
He was in Apollo, right?
Yeah,
he's Benny Medina, Lord.
Yeah. Apollo.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. That shit was bad off.
But no, actually,
it's good.
Actually, John was a little more legitimate. But anyway,
we need a theme for it, Greg.
Yeah, you do. You do. Or maybe I'll just come up with my own. I'll just do a couple of spots for you. But anyway,
Don't be teasing us now.
Yeah, but,
don't write a check. Cash can't cash.
Give over now.
You can't pay for it.
But,
that's right.
You might be surprised. Oh. Anyway, so
Evan,
yes.
So y'all had a group called PM.
No, we had a dream. We had the idea of a group, but it never came to fruition.
What projects? What? Okay.
But you know what we did work on together?
What?
A TV series. Oh, the name of the producer escapes me right now. But the show was called The Righteous Apples.
Oh, my God.
How about
the
that?
The Righteous, yeah. They did a cover of Let It Go by Let the Love Out of Your Heart. It was a Page's joint originally. Richard Page did the joint. And then they did a cover of it. The Righteous Apples. It was like they were like a high school.
Yes.
Was this with Cindy Heron from?
No, but I'm trying to think of the name of the creator and the writer, and I can't for the life of me right now. Black guy where he wore round glasses.
PBS.
It was a PBS thing, and we wrote and produced songs for that show.
Like Rollerella.
Yeah. As a matter of fact,
I'm looking at the IMDb page right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and
we'll just pretend you're that smart.
I'm not.
Is there another song called Feels Like the First Time?
It doesn't list just this one.
Okay. But I'm, yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, we did that. And that was the crime.
Stoney Jackson was in it.
Stoney Jackson was in it.
All right.
Yeah.
All Stoney roads Jackson was in Streets of Fire. Stoney
yes, he was. But John doesn't look like Stoney.
No. And Ernest Thomas.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Ernest once thought I was Common's bodyguard.
That's hysterical.
That broke my heart, man.
That's hysterical. Well, that's funny.
So, yeah.
Oh, it was Topper Carew.
Top, thank you, Topper Carew.
Who went
thank
on to you. Do Martin.
Martin, yeah.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yes. That was my introduction to Topper.
That was the first thing that you scored or like for television?
I think it was the only thing.
Okay, so
Michael Henderson was on there? Sorry.
Really?
He was on an episode, yeah.
He was?
I guess as
wait, was just, this a just drama?
As a member of, just as a member of the band, not okay. as like a speaking
role. Wouldn't call. Well, I guess you can call it a drama, sort of. Yeah, I guess.
Michael Henderson in it. What year?
80 and 81 was when the show was on.
Oh, that's yeah. the cocaine Michael Henderson years.
Oh, that's messed up. That's
bring like, that shit down to a whisper.
Can you please break it down, yeah, please, motherfucker? Have you ever heard of Michael Henderson's rant, drunken rant in Japan?
No.
Oh, dude.
So is it classic?
Oh, my God.
It's the best thing. Best thing really? In life. Just Google.
I'm not breaking it down for nobody. I'm not backing it up. Marvin Gaye is dead. Ted Pendergrass is a fuck.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah, Curtis dude. Mayfield. They trying to kill Curtis Mayfield. Like, he's just drunk and yeah. he's playing in front of, feels like he's performing for an audience of 14.
And you could hear people like, because he's responding to people, oh, you going to leave, baby? Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
People walking out.
And they're just like, just sing your song. I'm breaking up.
What
and
year is this? I'm looking. 80,
it has to be 84.
Okay. Lies not wasting any time.
No, I'm the one.
It has to be 84. And like Norman, I think Norman Connors is drumming, but wow. he takes, it's a 7-minute buildup to sing Going Places.
Yeah.
And when he
a very special person. Like I did, I was like, damn, it's like he gets into the verse before you realize it's Going Places.
Right.
It sounds nothing. I'm like, oh, that's what he's singing.
His then, son, his wow. son lives in Philly and keeps taking it off of YouTube.
Yeah, because I can't find it right now.
Oh, wow.
But someone keeps putting it
in. Messed up.
I got it. I got the MP3. Up. That shit ain't going nowhere.
Have you ever seen a version where they made a video to it? Stones Throw
no.
made. Stones Throw did like a clip.
An animated
clip
to
it.
Oh, no. Really?
It's the best thing on earth.
Take me on motherfucking yours right motherfucking now. He goes into the next song. Dude.
Oh, this sounds better than Ray Charles's. It sounds better than Buddy Rich's. It sounds better than the Freddie White. Hubbard's.
Oh, I heard about Freddie Hubbard.
Really?
I haven't heard that one.
Past those three.
Really?
Past those three.
I need those.
Because they're cursing people out, but this is just like, he's just...
Ray, wow. Which one is the Ray? Where is he cussing people out at?
Oh, someone interrupts.
Oh, no. There's a scuffle between him and the drummer who at the time, I think it was... Not Bernard, but...
I thought it was Fathead.
Fathead was a sax player.
Yeah, Fathead was a sax player, but it was a scuffle between him and the drummer, and the drummer walked off. And he said, that's all right. All right, no worries, all right. It was really tense. Yeah, that
okay,
one.
He's doing Busted. I have a version of him doing Busted.
Okay.
And then someone gets on the stage, is like, you a dog. You a dog. And Ray's just like, oh, bless your heart. Wow. Bless your heart. You were nothing but a dirty dog.
Oh, it's a woman.
A guy, basically, like, Ray must have did something wrong to a woman, either slept with his wife or something.
Oh.
He said, you ain't nothing but a dog. Yeah, bless your heart. Can someone please get this gentleman off the stage, please? You ain't nothing but a dirty dog. You a dog. And then they take him off, and then, like, you hear him walking, like, crash cuts out.
Oh, yeah, you see him walking back.
And then all right, let's start the song. like nothing happened. But yes, it's up there. But no, Michael Henderson.
Oh, Freddie Hubbard loses his shit. That's the name of it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So listen, I know you have a billion of these. What three songs did you say no to that you could have been on? Like, did you only stay in the winner circle, Michael, Lionel, Stevie?
Well, the only example I have of that is a song that I was originally asked to overdub on piano.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very... full of myself.
Oh no.
And I went and did the session, but I mean, I was full of myself musically, and I thought like whatever I played would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, because they just wanted something. They just wanted the changes in the rhythm that it was in. And I was overplaying.
Okay.
I overplayed my way out of the session, and I regret that because I really love this song, and it's one of my favorites from George Benson. It's Turn Your Love Around.
Wait a minute. How do you... You, they just wanted you to play the piano line.
They just wanted dun dun dun, 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 dun. But I was playing dun dun dun, 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 dun. I was just overplaying, you know. Okay. And I
were they
I
afraid to ask you to just play simple?
I guess they just said, "Well, it's not okay. Thanks." And then the next thing I know, somebody else was on it. But so yeah. But I remember being asked to play on it, but I didn't play it right, you know. And I could have, and I even at that point I was definitely more trained mm-hmm. because of all the other years of doing sessions, and I just should have known better, but I overplayed.
Were you formally trained how to play music? We didn't talk about that. Were you formally, like, you know how to read, or was it just by ear?
I started playing by ear at my mom says, legend has it, 2. I started playing by ear at around 2. But then I started taking lessons at around 6, and so I did have formal training. Okay. I had 3 teachers, and the third one was the most influential and the most effective. And he was the pianist with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and his name was Misha Kotler, and he was a badass. He didn't take any mess. And you know, I needed discipline because I was running over my last teacher because I thought I was hot snot and knew everything. Mm-hmm. And I left his house crying many times because he was this Russian, you know, like Polish, and he was, you know, very strict and took no mess, you know. But it's the discipline I needed.
That's what's up.
Wait, did Lukather produce that? Quincy,
Turn Your Love Around.
Who
Turn Your Love
that?
Around? He actually, I think he might have been one of the producers. I think, I'm not sure, but.
But it wasn't Quincy though, right?
No.
Okay. What have you played on that we might not know? Like,
surprise! Jay Graydon did Turn Your Love Around.
Thank you.
That was Jay Graydon?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So weird.
Yeah. What have I played on that you may not? This is a hard question for you because you know everything.
I mean, like, you know, did you sub for, you know, Are You on the Heat Is On by Glenn Frey? Or
no.
Is that you playing on I Can't Tell You Why?
No, I wish.
That's really me playing on Hell yeah. F. Yeah, XLF, right.
No, I can't even think of anything.
You did a Floetry remix? Is that for real?
A Floetry remix? Yeah.
Or is Discogs lying to me right now?
I did a Floetry remix?
Maybe they did the remix.
Yeah, they're lying.
Oh, they did the remix. Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, they gave you credit.
Apparently. Really? Mm. Oh, okay.
Outside
thanks.
Of the...
Wait a minute.
What?
Oh, I'm so glad this came to me. It's going to kill me.
What?
I got to go back to Triumph.
Okay.
And explain. You said this to me once and I didn't know. Okay, so help me out here, guys. Dilla, Lightworks,
Raymond Scott.
There you go. Okay. On Your Ways, on Triumph.
I was going to ask about that, actually. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
You said... Was that the exact what's going on? Like
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that the instrument used was a mellotron. Yeah.
But the same one, did you tell me that that was the same exact one that Marvin used on What's Going On?
Oh, I don't think so. I couldn't possibly know that.
Okay.
No, but I know.
Someone told me. Okay,
someone said that like that.
Either Randy,
Marvin
really?
Had it, or that Barry had it specially made.
Well, yeah, and then Barry had. Do you know the story of Motown that Raymond Scott had convinced Barry Gordy to purchase 2 of his version of Tonto,
okay.
and he ordered 2 of them, and then I think mid-second one they just discontinued the. Production. He was like, no, never mind.
Year was this?
70. 69, 70.
69, 70.
Because I'm wondering if these instruments that you're talking about, if they were used in these incredible ways for songs like Reflections. Because I defy anybody to tell me what the hell that sound is in the opening. Whatever that is. So, and then they use something else later on, like whoop, 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 you know, in these random places in the song, which is brilliant. But I have no idea what it is.
Here it is. Okay, so yeah, 1969, okay. Barry Gordy tipped off about a mad musical scientist engaged in mysterious works.
Wow.
Visited Scott at his Long Island lab to witness the electronium. That's what he called it.
Electronium, wow.
Yeah, and all of its infinite possibilities. And Gordy hired Scott in 71 to serve as director of Motown's electronic music and research department in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And okay. A position Scott held until 1977.
Really?
Wow. No Motown recordings using Scott's electronic inventions have been publicly identified.
Well, sad as that.
But yeah, he originally, someone says that he originally started working on the electronium out of Barry's house. They set up a room over the garages, and he worked there putting stuff together so Barry could get involved and see the progress. And at one point, worked out of the studio. The unit never got finalized, and Ray had a real problem letting go. It was always being developed, and that was a problem for Barry.
You know what? What do you think? It probably sounded like crap.
It was a waste of $700,000.
What do you think? It probably just wasn't good.
Yeah. Do you have a We Are the World question, Steve?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even put it together in my head that was you on that. Just, you know, is your name on the cover of that 45? Like,
no, not the cut. No, that's just the artist. But I did play piano on it.
Well, you're the artist. You're one of the artists, then. What happened there?
No, I wasn't. No,
it's not on the cover.
No, Nope.
Ever since you walked out, it ain't been the same.
It really hasn't. I don't know what.
Hey, Greg, who was the artist, and maybe this is the same person, but who was the artist that you really ran to the studio outside of course, Stevie Jackson's Lionel, that you ran to the studio to work with because you were so excited, and who was the artist that you ran on tour to be with?
Nobody.
You were so excited. Is there anybody?
Well, as far as touring, you know, there was a time when I toured with a Beatle.
Okay.
Which one?
The Ring?
Nope. This other guy that I was touring with, I was in his band, and we already had a set thing going, and then that artist managed to convince George to tour with us, and he said, "You can use my band." And so it was the Eric Clapton and George Harrison tour of Japan. Mm. And you haven't lived until you've toured with a Beatle.
Jesus
Christ. It didn't suck. And we go to here's a crazy thing. We go to Tokyo, and of course George was absolutely lovely, beautiful human being. We go to Tokyo, and we're all terribly excited. We're in the hotel. It's called the Capital Tokyo Hotel. Mm-hmm. We're in George's room. TV's on, and they're playing footage. They're announcing, obviously, that George is in town, but they're playing footage of when the Beatles pulled up to the exact same hotel we're staying in. So now I'm in a suite with a Beatle watching footage of when his band pulled up to the same hotel we're in. I'm like, okay, just kind of take this in for a second. And so we toured around. It was great. And then another George story, which I always love to tell. It was the second time I went to visit him at his home, and he opens the door and he's in cornrows.
Who's that? George Harrison.
George Harrison was in cornrows. I kid you not. Yeah. Okay. He opened the door and I go, "Well, I didn't see this coming, George." He's like, "What do you think?" I said, first of all, how did you even get your hair in cornrows?
Where is the black girl hiding?
Okay, how did that work? But he was in cornrows. I wish I took a picture of him. But so we're hanging out, and then he goes, "Right, do you want to hear the new song then?" I go, "Okay." We go up to the bedroom, plays the thing, and I got my private world premiere of Free
As a Bird.
Wow.
As a bird. And I'm sitting there and I'm absolutely transfixed and mesmerized. Yo. I can't believe that I'm, first of all, sitting in the bedroom of a Beatle,
right,
listening to the last song all the Beatles did.
Damn, man.
And I'm sitting there and chills are running up and down my spine. First of all, I'm getting chills even talking about this right now. But I'm sitting there and I'm just trying to take all this in. I'm going, I'm in a room with George Harrison and I'm listening to the last Beatles song. Oh, my God. I can't believe this is happening right now. But.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, on the heels of that question,
yeah.
you also MD'd a lot of specials and yeah. award shows.
Yeah.
What was one of your favorite experiences with that? P.S. I really enjoyed watching you because you were always so animated. So.
Thank you. Well,
what was your first one that you did? Like your first awards that you...
Oh my goodness, I don't know. First award show that I MD'd? Wow, I don't know. I'd have to research that.
Awesome
I don't
life.
Know.
Awesome life.
Damn, so Ricky Minor wasn't awesome. Born with that baton in his hand? He just...
Okay, here you go.
I'll just play it big yellow.
Thank you. But no, I don't remember. But I tell you what, pretty much the best one was. It was based off of how I got started.
The Jackson 3rd, the special.
Nope.
No, you said how you got started. So
I
that's
got
Stevie.
Started.
So...
No, I was thinking of the Detroit Symphony thing.
Stevie. Yeah. What's Stevie's
spelling? Oh! Songs in the Key of Life. It was a Grammy tribute. I MD'd it.
That's right. And you won an Emmy.
Yeah. So that's why that's the best one.
Ah. So you're a G, an egg.
Yeah. So the second best one is probably the Jackson's 30th anniversary at the Garden because, I mean... This is the Jackson's 30th anniversary in the Garden.
Question.
Yeah.
Since that night was so vivid and that day after was so memorable.
Yeah.
How did
And by the way, this was based off of, because we did two shows.
I know. I'm going to ask you about that second show.
Okay.
How did you get out of New York City?
Right. Well, it wasn't by plane.
Yeah.
First of all, nothing was happening the day of. Or the day after.
We might want to tell everybody what that day was.
It was September 11, 2001.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was after the second show, which was September 10th, and the first show, which was the 8th.
Because there
was a break in between, I think, because of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
But the first show was September 8th. The second show was September 10th. And I remember after that show, just... having more of a private celebration, dinner with a buddy of mine at the time, and had just kind of a celebratory dinner, and everything was great. And then my wife at the time, the next morning, we slept in late because, we had such a great night. So we slept in late, and I had this plan. I had two plans that I wanted to do. I wanted to go to Central Park and take my wife on a canoe ride. And I also wanted to go to my favorite place, my favorite restaurant for lunch, which is a restaurant called Le Bill Bouquet. And so I called the restaurant after I woke up because I wanted to make reservations. I called and said, yeah, what's going on? I said, I'd like to, come to the spot today. And the person said, today's not a good day. I said, why? She said, it's not a good day. People are crying. It's terrible. It's not a good day. I go, what are you talking about? The person went, have you seen the news?
Oh,
I go, God. No. I said, you might want to turn the TV on right now. That's how we found out.
Wow. Damn.
And then after the initial shock, which took a long time to get over. Then we started smelling smoke. And by the way, I was staying...
What hotel? Yeah.
I was staying at the Plaza Athenae, way, way uptown. Wow. And you could smell the smoke there.
Wow. Damn.
The producer of the show, David Guest, was very good to me, though, because he let me stay at the Plaza Athenae until the end of the week or until I could get a way out.
Get out.
And so what happened was we kept trying by flights, and it was very, very, very difficult. Frida Payne, I remember, was one of the lucky ones. She got out on a plane. Came to find out later on that Michael...
that car ride with Elizabeth Taylor.
He went in. That was a whole...
And that was real?
Yeah,
wow.
He did that. But I didn't know how.
Have y'all heard about that?
The cross country that they made a movie about?
With Elizabeth Taylor. And what's his name? Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I don't know. Because I didn't know that at the time, and I didn't know how the rest of the brothers made out. I didn't know how anybody else got out. But me and my wife, at that time, we couldn't get a plane out, so we just decided at the end of that week, that Saturday, that we'd rent a car. So we drove over to we went over to Jersey and got a Hertz rental car, and we drove cross country. And it was part of like a mini cavalcade because Cheryl Lynn was with us.
Oh man,
Cheryl Lynn,
yeah, and
strange bedfellows.
Yeah, she and her cousin, or her manager actually. We didn't drive all together, but we drove like, you know, in separate cars, and we drove cross country all the way back. And we stopped in St. Louis where her manager's mom lived. And was it St. Louis? I'm pretty sure it was St. Louis. We stopped there and we made a couple other stops and we drove all the way. And that was the first and only time I ever drove cross country. And I never imagined it would be for that reason.
Damn. Shit.
It's been some traffic.
That's crazy.
Huh. No traffic. No traffic. It was eerily calm and still. There's no traffic. And I remember hearing them play this particular song a lot during our cross country ride, and it was a song by Enya.
Sail Away?
No.
That is not the right. No.
Radio changed like for that for like 2 weeks.
No.
Yeah.
They only play like Imagine.
And there was a whole no songs or the no playlist.
Yeah, which is why I OD'd on the Blueprint.
Yeah,
because it came up that day. Yeah,
yeah.
It's,
Matt, do you remember? I'm sure you remember. Can you take us through where you were when you got the news about Mike?
Yes, I was in Beverly Hills, and I was. I just dropped off a watch to get repaired. And my wife at that time called me and said, "Did you hear about Michael?" I go, "What are you talking about?" I heard the news and I just...
You knew.
I was in shock. You know, it was just, you know. And yet, I wasn't. You know. And what I really remember after that is going through the preparations with Randy, because Randy brought me in, and he wanted me to help out with the memorial, and then we had a meeting at Ken Ehrlich's house, Randy, Ken, and I, and we started talking things. You know, talking things through, and you know, to artists and so forth. And I remember thinking, well, it would be really nice if Steve sang "I Never Dreamed You'd Leave in Summer."
I had to change the channel.
Which was deeply poetic because he did leave us in summer. Mm-hmm. I remember going. I remember having private meetings, you know, with Randy, and I remember going down to LA Live, and it was the only time that I was in the LA Live executive building, you know, where all the offices were. And I remember having we had this meeting with Randy and Ken and Simon. What's Simon's first name? Zeidman. He basically runs LA Live, Staples Center, and Microsoft Center. Lee Zeidman. Liwicki wasn't there at that time, I don't think, but there were other executives, and we were discussing everything, like, you know, how many tickets for family, how many tickets for VIPs, all this kind of stuff, everything, mm-hmm. you know. And then I remember meeting at Staples with the brothers in a backstage room, and it was me and the brothers, Ken Ehrlich, Valdez Flagg, legendary stage manager, and maybe one other person, and we were just all sitting there. And at different points, you know, one of the brothers would cry. It was really, really heavy. And I remember also taking the walk through the underground tunnel from Staples to what is now Microsoft Center, because there's this underground tunnel that connects the two. Because it was built that way for, you know, just as a cool thing for any artist that wanted to do double duty or whatever. Mm-hmm. Easy access, you know. And so we walked this underground tunnel from Staples to, it was a different name then, but whatever. But so we go there, and that was designed for the family to leave Staples to go to Microsoft Center for the overflow of people who couldn't get into Staples. And it was designed for the, so the family was going to go. The original idea was that the family was going to go and thank them, but they didn't do it. They didn't do it. We did a practice walk, but after it actually happened, they didn't do it. They didn't do it. Cause it was like enough already, you know, it was like, you know, with everything that went on. And so yeah, it was very heavy. And I remember having a very, very private moment with Marlon at Havenhurst, and him, you know, we talked and you know, he cried on my shoulder, you know. Very, very difficult. But I also remember, you know, at Staples when we were there going through things, that Barry came over and we all took pictures together. Barry and the brothers and me, and just all kinds of memories, you know.
How can one be creative in a time like that? Because, you know, you have to go over arrangements and, okay, Mariah, what key do you want to sing in, and da 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 da, and, you know, call up musicians and background sound check. And
you know
all
what?
That.
You just do. You just do, man. I mean, one thing Ehrlich is really good at is just forging through, no matter what, because he's had to. And all kinds of, he's been hit with all kinds of last minute things, like, you know, they were rehearsing the Grammys, like the day of
the Grammys,
the Grammy thing where
Rihanna,
you know,
Chris Brown,
thank you, thank you.
God,
yeah,
oh, the Rihanna,
you
Chris
were,
thing.
I was there MD? That day.
I
were you
I,
the MD?
Crazy.
I think I was. I know I was there,
dude.
I know I was there.
All right, to so give you all backstory.
So you talk about having to change on the fly.
Yeah, wow. And what was it? What.
The backstory was that the Chris Brown Rihanna thing just happened,
okay.
And that was the year they decided to let artists double up on things. So Timberlake had like two or three songs,
okay.
And Chris Brown had two or three songs, and Rihanna had two or three songs, mm-hmm. And it was going to be like the first mashup thing of duets and multiple songs.
Mm-hmm.
But without Chris Brown Rihanna there was like space for five songs, and I'd never. Two things happened that day, which is the most surreal shit I've ever seen in my life. Mm. One. Ehrlich and his whole crew, literally, now it's about, let's say, an hour, 15 minutes until they realize that Brown and Rihanna are no show.
Both of them, yeah.
So they're just scouring up them.
Scrambling.
Boyz II Men, can you sing, let's say together? Al Green, can you? They're just grabbing people from the audience.
Like this.
We need a 4-minute like song. That, so that whole thing of like Boyz II Men singing, let's stay together.
Yeah, and Justin and all that stuff.
None of that shit was planned.
No.
The superstition thing with Stevie Wonder, with the Jonas Brothers.
With Jonas Brothers, yeah.
None of that shit was planned. But wait, here's the other funny thing. So the Coldplay controversy with Joe Satriani.
Oh, yeah, where they had jacked the Viva La Vida joint.
So they had been running away from getting their summons from Satriani's people for like 2 months. So he had a plan.
That's how they got.
He had a plan. He's like, yo, I'm going to get the motherfuckers at the Grammys. When I tell you, you remember them old Keystone Caper things where like you watch
the
a case.
Keystone Cops.
Like the cops on in this room.
The cops.
On
the
right.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, that's funny.
So you had the people running this way to serve the papers, and then Coldplay running this way. And then it was like you could have put Flight of the Bumblebee to the shit I saw. Of just,
really?
I had no idea.
Just, and to top it, oh God, I don't know if I should.
We'll edit it out if we need to.
No, just.
No, I said all my stuff.
No, it's just the end of the night. you know, like artists are like very, think of like a cat like Oasis, you know, those guys like, hey, I don't care about the Grammy, like fuck the Grammys and that sort of thing. But Tom York took losing to Coldplay very, very hard.
Oh, really?
And
how hard?
A very emotional way. So just to, that was the most surreal.
Damn.
But to see, yeah, literally between Ehrlich just scrambling for people to sing shit and Coldplay and Satriani's.
I had no idea that bit was going
on. Dog. It was the funniest day of my life.
Wow. Yeah,
it was funny.
I'm glad somebody had something to laugh about that day.
Well, it didn't. The thing was, we didn't. No.
I know. You didn't know what was happening. Right.
Yeah. It's sort of like being in the New York doing the blackout.
Right.
Like in Detroit, I saw y'all. I knew y'all were in the blackout, but I don't think y'all like really knew because there was no TV to turn on to see.
Yeah. Right. You couldn't see.
Right. We couldn't.
Right.
You couldn't be told you were in a blackout.
But it was just like, oh, we heard like Rihanna's not coming. Like we didn't, till I got home, then we saw, oh, shit, that happened.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
That was the sort of the thing. Wow. So, did we cover everything in your life?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
You know.
Like,
what are we missing? Like a whole part two?
Yeah, I would
part
say
two.
Yes.
This is already a two-part episode.
About like weird science and movies and shit.
Oh, wow. You did weird science? You scored weird science?
I didn't score it. I did. Actually, I just did one thing.
Okay.
For a female artist, who the girl who did Private Joy.
Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
She did a cover Prince?
Yeah. Yeah. And I sang the demo.
Private Joy.
Produced by Jimmy Iovine.
Wow.
Oh, that's right.
Somebody asked me to do that, produce that thing for that girl. So I did. I did Private Joy.
Weren't you in the live scene of Streets of Fire? Were you in the band? No.
No, okay. No, I was in another movie, darling.
What movie?
This Is It?
My only movie debut. I didn't do This Is It.
Yeah, because Michael.
Oh, right. You're right. Sorry.
Okay.
I was young.
Uh-oh. Say it.
But you haven't lived until you've been directed by Steven Spielberg. Thank you.
What movie?
Oh. The Color Purple.
Cha-ching.
Yes! Really? The Duke joint!
You were the piano player. Time to go.
We got two people in the Color Purple.
Wow. So was he. Ron Sigolo was in the Color Purple too.
He's in the Color Purple.
I was an extra in the Color Purple as well. I was six.
What, were you a baby?
Yeah.
Yes. I was six. I was one of the kids. The scene scene where she's hanging up clothes and she's saying, no, you got to fight. You got to, what Celia and Eddie are talking.
Yeah.
And so then like a kid comes and runs through the sheet. And she's like, y'all get on away from here. I was
no
one of the kids.
No way, that's hysterical.
I'll show you a picture. Yeah,
gosh,
dude.
You're not going to believe this, but also I was in the kids.
Yeah.
You were the mailman?
No. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the mailman.
He was with Miss Millie.
You were the kid. You were one of the kids of the owner of the general store.
Right.
Yeah.
You gonna buy something, girl?
You gonna buy something, girl?
Yeah, you were the pair, but time to go.
How many times did you do that?
But guess what, though? Guess what?
What?
That's not even my voice doing time to go.
I was wondering.
Oh, wait. I could, but I did say it.
Yeah.
I did say it, but in the overdubbing process, I guess it wasn't loud enough, so they had somebody else go, well, gotta go. But I did, that's me playing.
Wow.
Now, isn't that hysterical?
Fucking dope.
So, awesome. Laia, if you want a really good laugh, whip that out one night. You'll crack up.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
You'll laugh yourself silly.
Wait, Greg.
But that's how I met Oprah. What? And that's how I met Danny.
Danny Glover, yeah.
Right.
And that's how I met the cast of Wacky Characters. Mm. And,
Wait.
There's another thing that IMDb that I'm very proud of.
What? Laia,
that you probably didn't know I did.
Okay.
Thanks to Ken Ehrlich. Oprah's final two shows. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Wait.
What were her final two shows?
An extravaganza with every star you've ever heard of in your entire life in the entire galaxy that she's ever interviewed that came out.
Oh, to say goodbye and
that
stuff. So what musical moment, who was the last, you MD'd whatever the musical moment was?
Oh, I MD'd the whole thing.
So who was the last person to sing?
I don't know who the last person was, but probably my favorite segment was when we surprised it with Steve.
Oh, okay.
Because what happened was the setup was Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went to her and started, you know, talking all his smack and everything, and he started "Isn't She Lovely?" Right? So he started it. So we did a slow version, and that's me playing with him and everything. And then I do some chord changes, you know, some different chords to set up into the original key of "Isn't She Lovely" for Steve to rise out of the floor on a piano. He, "Isn't she lovely?" And she turns around and goes, "Oh my God!" So that was, yeah.
Wait, I gotta ask. Have you ever had, as an MD, a Murphy's Law moment? Where you
everything could go wrong? I don't
like
know.
Has a sequencer ever not worked on, you know, when jam is on at the intro, or you know, did you miss if you can't feed your baby cue on that freeze, yeah, or want to be starting something, or
we probably did. We probably had some. You mean during the bad tour?
Well, yeah, I mean just in general.
Or in
like,
general? Not yeah, probably, but not anything that just stands out to where I go, "Oh, you won't believe this." So I'm sure they happened, but they were mercifully far and few between.
Oh, okay. Well,
wait,
great.
I'm sorry. I really do want to know what you played on "We Are the World." Like, what instruments that you?
Oh, just piano.
I played piano, and because Lionel plays piano too, right?
Yeah, but well, and to your point, yes, and he co-wrote the song, but no, he doesn't need to play it. He's one of the featured artists, so he doesn't need to play. So there were
other synths and stuff there.
Oh yeah, so Quincy had a few of us. It was me, David Page, and I think, and there was one other one. I can't remember who. They're gonna kill me though. But I played piano. Page played, you know, electric piano, I think, or other instruments, and there was a third keyboardist as well. Strings? So there were a bunch of us. No, well, just other synths, not strings, but yeah. So there were, I'm pretty sure, three keyboard players, and I did the piano.
Thank you.
Well, Brother Greg.
Amir.
You gave us.
This has been fucking amazing, man.
Dog, you brought it. You brought the stories. You brought the drama.
My hands
you brought
ain't
the mystery.
Sweating.
Well, you know what? But it takes someone as nerdy and as knowledgeable as you are, and your fine team, let me just say right now, you guys are really wonderful.
Thank you.
Even
thank
Steve.
You so much.
And I must say,
I don't know.
Okay, no, I get it. No, I get it.
Bodily function, that's all.
I know, I get it. And I have to pee right now, but I must say,
me too.
I had no idea that I would be here for over 3 hours, but
like,
I have enjoyed every second of it. It's felt like 3 minutes, and blessings to you all, and I really
same
appreciate
to you, man.
Yeah,
you
thank
doing
you.
Just thank you for just for all your contributions, all your music, just for raising all of us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you,
man. Well, thank you on behalf of Sugar Steve and Unpaid. Well,
he's not here.
On behalf of Sugar Steve and Boss Bill and Fontigolo and Laia. Yeah, I'd like to say thank you, Greg, and this is Questlove Supreme, and we will see you on the next go round, only on Pandora.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.